Okay, it's April 18, 2019, and it is Old Testament 14. Let me start with just a few things. Out of the book, The Song of the Bird by Anthony DeMello, a couple of things that make sense.
What's that?
What?
The Song of the Bird.
What you're hearing out there? Or
no.
The name of the book?
The book.
That's the name of the book.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going to read several things here, and they all do apply to the story today. A relative once came to visit Nasruddin, who is a trickster kind of person, you know, bringing a duck as a gift. So the bird was cooked and eaten. Soon, one guest after another began to call, each claiming to be a friend of the man who brought you the duck. Each one, of course, expected to be fed and housed on the strength of the hapless bird. At length, the scholar could stand it no longer. One day, a stranger arrived at the house and said, "I'm a friend of the kinsman who brought you the duck." And like the others, he sat down, expecting to be fed. Nasruddin, that's his name, placed a bowl of steaming water before him. "What is this?" said the stranger. "This," said the mullah, or the owner of what's happening, "is the soup of the duck that was brought to me by your friend." One hears people who become the disciples of disciples of disciples of someone who had the experience of the divine. Mm-hmm. How can you kiss through a messenger is the question. And that's what, you know, what our whole faith system has become. People just are fed what they should believe, and then they believe it without having had, except you, except Lenore, who had lots of experiences and then threw them all away and said, "Forget it." She was the smart one. One more here. The village priest was distracted in his prayers by children playing outside his window. To get rid of them, he shouted, "There's a terrible monster down at the river. Hurry there, and you will see him breathing fire through his nostrils." Soon the whole village had heard of this monstrous apparition and was rushing to the river. When the priest saw this, he joined the crowd. As he panted his way to the river, which was 4 miles away, he thought, "It is true, I invented the story, but still you never can tell." A good way to believe in the gods we have created is to convince others of their existence. Another one. And then I've got one more here. The Guru's Cat. I love this one. Because when I started teaching this, it was during a time in our country's history where we were arguing about whether the American flag should be in the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. That was a huge, big issue. So when the guru sat down to worship each evening, the ashram cat would get in the way and distract the worshipers. So he ordered that the cat be tied during the evening worship. After the guru died, the cat continued to be tied during evening worship. When the cat died, another cat was brought to the ashram so it could be duly tied during the evening worship. Centuries later, many things were written by the guru's scholarly disciples on the liturgical significance of tying up a cat while worship is performed. This is, and it's truly funny, but it's also very, very true.
But you know, you almost have to get out of your own culture to see that.
Yes, I agree. Okay, I've got one thing in here. Let's see if I can find it. I'm going to look up in the, I should have marked it under prayer, because that's a biggie too. I'm sorry. Here it is. The master never ceased to attack the notions about God that people entertain. If your God comes to your rescue and gets you out of trouble, he would say, it's time to start searching for another God. When asked to elaborate, this is the story he told. A man left a brand new bicycle unattended at the marketplace while he went about shopping. He only remembered the bicycle the next day, and he rushed to the marketplace expecting it would have been stolen, but the bike was there exactly where he left it. Overwhelmed with joy, he rushed to the nearby temple to thank God for having kept his bicycle safe, only to have found when he got out of the temple the bike was gone. I mean, all of this is leading toward the fact that you have to be open to having your own experiences. We can know the story, we can understand the best we can that we have a 2,000-year history, but it doesn't make any sense unless you connect with an openness and have your own experiences. Now listen to this. The budget should be balanced, the treasury should be refilled, the public debt should be reduced, the arrogance of the officials should be tempered and controlled, and the assistance to foreign lands should be curtailed lest we become bankrupt. This is a quote from Cicero in 663 BC in Rome. Has anything changed?
No.
Nothing. Nothing. Isn't that interesting? I mean, we just keep repeating history, and we keep repeating history because of the three things I read to you from there, how everybody just is so easily attached to repeating what you've heard from somebody else. I said to Jack recently, the older I get, the happier I am that I grew up in New Jersey, which was the world. And nobody except the Catholics and the Jews had a corner on anything. And I came out here and I was in shock. What are they doing? Their lawns are green. I mean, everything. They are so self-assured. And then I lived here long enough to find out they're not. They're not. Except they have to hang out with people who feel they've got all the answers and they all agree, and they never have the experiences. They never do, because they've got all the answers. Okay, we have come from, so far in the story, the covenant of Abraham, the Mount Sinai experience with Moses, the wilderness experience, the conquest experience, the judges experiences, and the Confederacy, you know, when they get into the Promised Land and they get themselves organized. Those are all historic memories that our people supposedly had. Well, we've covered hundreds of years. And when we had Saul as our first king, you know, we decided we wanted to be like everybody else because everybody around us was so successful. Saul was a charismatic king, and there was unity in the beginning about that. And then David became the next king. He was the one political and ecclesiastical success person. And if you read about him, you know he was human, and he made some mistakes like all humans do, but he still kept it all together. And then what happened under David, it was decided that they would, because he was such a good king, that they would always have somebody from his lineage be the king. And that was the beginning, the beginning of everything falling apart. Because David's, the third one is Solomon, who is David's seventh son. I believe it's seventh. And he was into wealth. We're going to make this country the best. We're going to keep ourselves safe no matter what I have to do. I will sacrifice myself by marrying 1,000 wives with the surrounding people that were scary and that could overtake us. I mean, Jews believe in embroidering on stories. I need mm-hmm. to remind you of that. Mm-hmm. You know, to make a point. Mm-hmm. Never would I believe he had 1,000 wives, but he had a lot of wives, and he married for political reasons. He did everything he did for political reasons, to keep the country safe and strong, and that was the beginning of a mess. And so, when we move on, even during David's time and during Solomon's time, and you asked me if we're going to look at Proverbs. We won't, probably, but you need to know that Solomon wrote Proverbs. And Solomon wrote everything he wrote to tell the people how to live. Everything he says in there is advice for how you're supposed to live. Now, the point is, he had a better way to live, you see, than the religious people. And he said a lot of smart things. You know, Proverbs is not a, it was successful, or it wouldn't be in the Bible. And this is the beginning of the downfall. And it takes hundreds and hundreds of years and many kings, because the nation splits. Israel is up in the north. Judah is the tribe of David down in the south. And it was, they're very careful, the New Testament writers, to show in the genealogy of Jesus that he was related to David, making the point, whether he was or not, they made that point. You know, I don't care if he was or not, but that's their story, you know, and mm-hmm. that's not the important thing about the story. What I've decided in this last week for myself, I would like to take Jesus Christ out of Christianity, out of any religious system, and spread the spirit of that man all over the whole world. And because we have gotten so hyper-organized in Christianity that we know very few places get into really doing and saying what Jesus did and said. It's all about building a bigger church, more performance to bring more people in. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying at that point? Mm-hmm. Christianity is really simple. It's just love your neighbor as yourself, care about the throwaway people, all of that. Mm-hmm. But this is the beginning of an the issue that is a problem. There was now a division between the prophets and the priests. And under Solomon, he controlled both the prophets and the priests, the kingdom prophet. So this is a time when other people start speaking out. And those are all the other little prophets that I've got. Handouts telling you who they all are, what their main emphasis was, how did they fit into the kings, you know, because they are only in the Bible because what they prophesied came true. You can be sure there were many other voices during this time, but if it didn't come true, they didn't make it into the story, because that would not be a very good story. You know, seriously, I mean, even the writers of the putting the Bible together, we're very honest about that. So now we have three channels during Solomon's time determining what God's will was. Number one is dreams. People listened and paid attention to dreams. I've had that experience myself, you know, of You don't always dream in detail something that speaks to you, but pay attention to your emotion that you experienced. You know, if there's fear in your life, you may not dream about what's going on, but you'll have a... I remember as a child, I had a recurring dream when my dad started getting sick of being on a swing and pushing me higher and higher, and a large animal nipping at my feet every time I'd come down. That was real fear, and I was experiencing fear, you know, but that's how it showed up in the dream. I haven't had that dream in years and years and years, thank goodness.
You outlived the animal.
I did, obviously, I did. So, dreams. The second way of determining the will of God was throwing the dice, throwing sacred dice, called Urim, U-R-I-M, and Thummim. That's T-H-U-M-M-I-N. And the priests had the job of throwing the sacred dice. Isn't this wonderful? I mean, so why aren't we throwing sacred dice? Because it's in the Bible. Right. So
Las Vegas.
throwing the dice.
In Buddhist temples.
Yeah.
They throw sticks and they're in the hall of sticks.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they take that as God's will. And then the third way to determine was prophecy. And so in those beginning days, Solomon had an approved prophet that spoke. That is why all these other crazy people show up on the scene. You know, my question is today, who's the prophet? Who are the voices that are going to speak up that we can listen to? Anyway, the priest officiated at sacred rites. He taught the traditions, manipulated the sacred dice. Manipulated, get that? Rituals had no creativity. You know, it was just going through the ritual, like warning people there's a monster in the river and then kind of getting them to believe it and believing it yourself, you know, that praying to God, thanking God, you know, for saving your bike only to come out and find out the bike is gone. It's that kind of thing because the king had to control the prophet. So all these other prophets are the ones that we go back and read. The state have no fear because we are God's kingdom. And everybody believed it. And we have three ways of knowing what God wants. And everybody believed it. The kingdom was composed of God's chosen people, ruled by an anointed son. Every king was anointed, and every king in Judah came from the same lineage. But the breaking apart of the kingdom, which we'll go into next week, David was never really king of the north, Israel, because they were breaking away at that point. God will forever defend us because we are his people. How many times, and I was young, but I lived in New Jersey, which was on the coast, and we had a whole summer where we were not allowed to swim in the ocean during the war. And I remember that because I was, you know, I was first grade or something like that. But we had nothing to fear because God was on our side. Mm-hmm. That was the word. And, you know, it's easy to get that way.
If God can be for us, who can be against us?
Right, right. All the purposes of God in history equated with what was happening, you know. So what happened was what God wanted to happen in history. You know, it doesn't do any good to say to somebody, when somebody dies, well, it was God's will, or God needed another angel in heaven. I just about throw up when I hear that. Who would worship that kind of a God who would take the person that I love, you know, when it was my dad? Doesn't God know who he need my dad? You know, it's that kind of, you know, as tough as those years were, I'm forever grateful because it helped form my understanding of God. I couldn't buy in. And the other part is that we went to a church, you know, where I've told you that before. Nobody knew if Paul was in the Old Testament or the New Testament. So I didn't have to unlearn anything when I came to Hope College and stayed out here. But it's scary, you know, when everybody believes the very same thing and it's black and white. And that's why we don't bother going into lots of details in this class. I just try to give you the overall picture so you can read and have your own understandings and put it together in an intelligent way because you know the historical background. And that's what makes a huge difference.
Did you ever hear that thing, do what's right and fear no evil? Mrs. McDowell said that, do what's right and fear no evil.
Well, these people felt that they were always doing right because God was
on
their...
That's a different kind of right.
That's a different kind of right.
That's different. Yeah. What's right in your own heart, do what's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Now, Nathan, you know, was a big prophet at this point. And during his time, that's when the kingship, and he was part of that, saying we need to anoint always from the line of David. But what happened with that is the charisma was no longer in place. Today, you know, I'd like to think the forefathers in this country were looking for charisma, you know, to be in our leaders. Now it's how much money you have. It's no longer charisma, it's money. Charisma no longer was summoned to be the leadership. Our overly organized, systematic leadership today doesn't allow for charismatic leadership. We don't have the patience to work through what we need to work through to find a charismatic leader. Somebody who really, I have to believe, and you know, it doesn't matter if you agree or not, I think Barack Obama made it being a black man because of his charismatic personality. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he appealed to enough people that he was intelligent and smart about every issues. And some people have never gotten over the fact that we had a black president. And I've heard that that's a lot of what we're doing now is a lot of feedback because of that.
Mm-hmm. But that's why we want to change everything that was done.
Right.
In those 8 years back to.
That's right. Mm-hmm. How what make America great again.
Yeah.
You know.
Back to white.
Anyway, white. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The professional prophets, and that all a lot of that began during the time of Saul. Devotion to Yahweh, fired by the energy of the prophetic ecstasy, which is the professional prophets copied what the Canaanites did. Have you ever seen the whirling dervishes in Turkey? These men in white coats that just spin and spin and spin and spin. I have a little statue of it. I was so taken by that. And they spin themselves into ecstasy. And they still do that. You know, I don't know if they believe it anymore, but they still do it because it's history. But at the end of that, I mean, you're practically drunk because of spinning so much. And then you come out with what God wants. That's how the professional prophet.
That would be
isn't that something? I should have brought my little thing in for you.
Whirring dervishes.
Thank you. That's what they're called.
Did that begin under Saul or Solomon?
Well,
those kinds of professional prophets.
Well, the professional prophets were beginning, but not, you know, not as strong as they were later on. But it came during it a little bit under Saul, more so under David. Nathan was not hired by David, but was loved by David. And he, you know, really believed Nathan and trusted Nathan. But it was under Solomon that it became an official part of the State Department. Prophecy was performed as a real service for these people during a time of crisis. But after it lost its original fire, and spontaneity, it degenerated into a professional trade under the control of the king. So criticism and protest now had to come from outside the organization, the political, religious organization. It's got to come from outside the church today, it seems. You know, it's the same kind of thing. But it had to come from outside the king and the prophet, because they were too well organized, had their rules and regulations. Nobody was open, you know, to any new ideas. Nobody was new to experiences. So the role of the prophets, he speaks the Hebrew word nabi, N-A-B-I, which means, and these are not to the not the professional prophets, but the others. And he speaks and announces or refers to one who communicates the divine will. These are the people. Here, I can hand these out to you. I've got, and when they say, the Greek word prophetes means to speak for another. And they always start by saying, the Lord says unto you. They are speaking for God. They are reminding the people that they are supposed to be a light in the world. They're not supposed to be so wonderfully secure and smart and rich and stronger than another country, you know, which, you know, I feel like we're repeating history. Mm-hmm. Right now. It's hard for me to remain non-political because it's screaming at me.
Do you think that every time any kind of religion gets organized, they start to go corrupt? Because the communication with God is such a fresh and vital thing. Mm-hmm. And as soon as something gets organized and has rules, it has the potential for self-destructing.
Well, and I think we need the organization to carry on the traditions and the memory, but the danger always is what you just said.
You have to keep that rawness and freshness.
Right. Yeah, you have to. It's very dangerous because then, all right, let's build a bigger building. Let's have, you know, sometimes, except in Michigan, we'd be better off if we stayed in the tents. You know what? Because it's scary stuff. Because then you have to generate more money. And Solomon did not generate money by annexing countries, you know, around him. So he had to heavily tax people. And in order to have peace and get rid of the fear of being overtaken, he marries somebody, you know, from another country. Solomon and all his wives. The prophet, the outside prophet, not the professional prophet, understands himself as one who is sent. He is sent to announce the word of Yahweh. Amos, I think I wrote it down. I don't have to look it up. Amos lived in Judah, spoke in Israel, a herdsman. This is during the time of the, I gotta find Ezra, I mean Amos for you. The time of the breaking apart of the whole nation. Amos 1, 3 to 5. Thus says the Lord. See, whenever the prophet says, thus said the Lord, he's grounding himself. For three transgressions of Damascus, and for four, I will not revoke the punishment, because they have threshed Gilead with threshing sledge. I shouldn't bother reading this, but I just want you to notice that he says, thus says the Lord. And you'll find that with all of the prophets. They're not speaking for themselves. They are always speaking for God. Oh, I thought that sounds just like mine. Go ahead.
Hello.
Jeremiah. Jeremiah 2, 1 through 3. The word of the Lord came to me, saying, always prefacing what they're going to say by connecting with God. Always. Instead of, you know, taking full credit, I've got a better idea. It's always coming from God. The authority is not in the prophet, but in the one who sent him. And you can, even in 1 Kings, the kings in Chronicles go through the history of all the kings. And you'll have prophets speaking up many times in that setting. And what I handed to you is a paper that shows you where they show up and who they show up with. This second one, Place of Prophets in the Divided Kingdom. It shows the kings that are in Israel and the kings that are in Judah, and you can plug the prophet into what's going on. The prophet was not one to communicate information about a timetable of events. Wouldn't that be nice to have somebody do that for you? They made predictions based on the belief that God works his will and purpose in history. I like that, because then God stops being a Santa Claus. All we have to do is be good and tell God how to do things for us, and then it happens. And that the prophet knew that that's not how it happened. It's like the guy with the bike, you know, going to thank God for saving his bike in the marketplace, only to have it stolen again. Most of their predictions had meaning for the immediate future. Immediate. He's concerned with the present. His task is to communicate now and to summon people to respond today. Isaiah. Let's find Isaiah. Isaiah 7. I should have marked all of these so I wouldn't waste so much time. Isaiah 7, 3. This is an interesting story. This is, a prophet, Isaiah, talking and warning the king. And the Lord said to Isaiah, so see, the prophet never takes credit. Go forth to meet Ahaz, that's a king. You and your son, I'll never pronounce it right, Shir-Jashub. And that name means a remnant shall return. The meaning of the name. At the end of the conduit of the upper pool and the highway of Fuller's Field, and say to him, take heed, be quiet, do not fear, and do not let your heart be faint because of these two smoldering stumps of fire. Firebrands. Those are cigar butts. He's talking about two foreign countries that Ahaz is afraid of. And listen to the language. I love it. Who could we call, cigar butts today? smoldering stumps of firebrands. At the fierce anger of Rezin and Sirion, the son of Remaliah, because Syria with Ephraim, the son of Remaliah, has devised evil against you. Don't worry about it. God is with you. And he goes on to say, let us go up against Judah and terrify. This is the Syria is claiming he's going to do that. They're going to do this. And thus says the Lord God, it shall not stand, it shall not come to pass, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim, which is the same as Israel, will be broken into pieces so that it will no longer be a people. He's warning against Israel. He's in Judah, and he's warning against and trying to tell them to stand fast and don't get into a panic. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is the son of Remaliah. If you will not believe, surely you will not be established. Believe. Believe, trust in God. And the Lord spoke to Ahaz, ask a sign of the Lord your God, and let it be. You can read this on for yourself. But I'm in Isaiah chapter 7. It's kind of a long story. Read it on your own. And he warns. He says, as a sign of the Lord your God, let it be as deep as Sheol or high as heaven. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, I will not put the Lord to the test. And he said, hear then, O house of David, is it too little for you to weary men that you weary my God also? You know, you people of little faith, you're tiring God about this too. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. And this is interesting. Behold, a young woman shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. He's not talking about New Testament story. He shall eat curds and honey when he knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the child knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land before these two kings will be deserted. He's saying, I'm going to give you a sign. Pay attention. There's a woman that's having a baby. And before that baby grows up from out of toddlerhood, both those countries that you're scared of will be gone. And it happened. It happened. He's warning Ahaz. That's Isaiah's wonderful way of making a point, you know, and he keeps putting it in the context that God is telling me to say this. I hear this from God. Trust in God. The message was meant to disturb from the prophet, and it was usually in the negative when it came from the prophet. Not the palace prophet, but the prophet that spoke out. The message tended to attack, especially during the time of the divided kingdom, the north and the south. You know, you sometimes wonder even about this country. Could we divide and be north and south?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We are so different, north from the south. North and South Korea, North and South Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? The message, Israel forgot her message to be a light to the nations and to be a sign of what it meant to live under the covenant. She forgot her, she got all involved in her own importance, Israel did. And the prophets are the ones that are important at this time in history. Some of the messages that come from the prophets, and I printed this out for you. Idolatry. Idolatry is a big one. Okay. You know, the people flocking to their worship services, using piety. You know, I mean, I grew up in a Catholic town.
It's the biggest criticism other religions have of Christianity, that we have an enormous amount of idolatry in it.
Yeah. Yes. And the piety, growing up in a Catholic area, a woman would never go into the church without her head covered. That was, and I'm sure there were good reasons for it, but, and it comes out of the Bible, sure. You know. But who knew the good reasons anymore? It was just an occasion to buy a new hat. And I was the maid of honor in a wedding for a good friend who was Catholic. And she had to design, make sure that all of us in the wedding party had enough on our heads that we'd be allowed into the Catholic Church during the service. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is piety that's gone way beyond anybody understanding what it's all about. Comes out of a time when women were not considered full partners. So why would you want to wear something on your head just because it was in the Bible? Came in from a terrible time in biblical history about women. We were just owned. Any questions? Or
do you think we can even make an idol out of Jesus Christ? He came to lead us to the Father, and we bowed down and worshiped the messenger.
Right, right. We do. And that was another thing that I felt a lot when I first came here. Does anybody ever talk about God? Mm-hmm. It was all Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I am very much in love with Jesus because not that he is God, but he showed us how to live, how to treat people. You know, and I've told you this before, my dad's, one of his good friends was Jewish, and that man always used to say, you don't know how lucky you are to have a man to look at. We only have history. Mm-hmm. And we are lucky, but why don't we take it more seriously? Mm-hmm. Why don't we take him more seriously? We are much more involved in, if you don't accept Jesus, you're not going to heaven. And I even have a friend that has said, I don't have to worry about anything because I accept Jesus. Well, isn't that interesting? I thought, what does that mean, you accept Jesus? You know, I'd never say that to her, but I'm not about to pick a fight. But, you know, I love it in this church that we are so intentional. And I really believe that about this church. We are intentional about feeding the poor and all these issues that we are very intentional about. And last week was one great hour of sharing, and Jack had written out the check at the beginning of the week, and then we forgot to bring it. Jeez. And he was an elder once, and he was into this one great hour of sharing, and he could not believe it. Could not believe himself. Anyway, the breakdown of, you know, of the whole good thought about, you know, being covenant people. And it isn't just the Israelis, so to speak, the Israelites. It's all people who hear God's message. We are all covenant people. And if we would just take that more seriously, I really believe the world could be a better place. But idolatry and spiritual blindness, complete breakdown of moral integrity, all of that occurs especially during Solomon's time. Now, the good thing is, you know, we've got the book of Proverbs, which is interesting, but know why he wrote it. He was telling people how to live instead of leading people back to the covenant promises and all those things that had happened to their ancestors that I read in the beginning. He didn't lead anybody back to those remembrances because the priest was a palace priest and he did all the ritualistic things, and the prophet was a palace prophet and he just did what the king wanted him to do. Said what the king wanted him to do, and assured everybody that they were God's people and God would always be on their side. So where is room for the voice that speaks for God? And the moral integrity, I just feel like we're repeating history. I really do, in many respects. And I think we have to take this seriously. Israel, the nation Israel especially, would not listen. And that handout I gave you that lists all the prophets, I mean, they're all considered evil. I didn't make these judgments. I didn't make these judgments on this place of prophets in the divided kingdom. I got this information from another place, you know, from a biblical place, from scholars. At least we have some good prophets in the kingdom of Judah. That's in the south. I'm quite sure I handed out maps to you. But, you know, the nation Israel is a whole lot bigger than Judah, the geographical area of, and we're not ever taking over the whole land. The Ammonites are still there, the Canaanites are still there. We got Syria up in the top, breathing down our necks, scaring the heck out of us. And Judah was worried about Syria and Israel, their own people, the Israelis. Yeah, but you know, greed is a huge, huge thing. And the more successful you are, the more you have to be aware of that driving force, you know, to be more successful, to be more powerful. These are all the issues. I don't know how to get in touch with Trump. I'd love to teach him about especially this section of the Bible. Wonder if he'd recognize anything. You know, it's the leadership. It's not just him. It's everybody.
You should go have a good job in the White House.
I should, right. It's all the people that support him that don't see through what is happening. I have a friend who we have been, a man I've been friends with since we were 10. And he went to Princeton, and then he went to Harvard Law School, and he was an international lawyer till he retired. And he has been saying since day one, Russia owns Trump. Mm-hmm. He owes financially a lot of money, and it's in Russia. That's why he won't let us see his tax returns, because Russia owns Trump. Well, Trump was a great businessman. I mean, he did a lot of huge things and had the courage to do what he needed to do, but does that make him the person that should be our president? Yeah. Well, he drove enough fear into us, and this is not meant to be a political. I just want you to think about our own world today and what is happening. Today, the church cannot allow ritual, financial affairs, and we've got this building program going on, but it's all paid for, and other secondary manners to interfere with the implication of the righteousness, living right with God, that is supposed to be who we are. Yes, we have been blessed, but that does not give us preferred status. Interesting, isn't it? Because the palace prophet continually told the people, we are God's people, we are safe, we can't do anything that's wrong, God will make sure it happens. Whenever the church makes a dichotomy between faith and ethics, to the point of making a small insistence on ethics, the church is under the judgment of God, along with the society of which it has become a part. Then criticism, protest has to come from outside the organized church. If nobody in the church will speak up, then it has to come from somewhere else. It's just, I could spend time going over. I decided to have this printed out, and you can read this on your own. But the stories are interesting. Hosea in Israel, the story about Gomer, the harlot, Hosea's wife, God's relationship with Israel is what you're looking at. The relationship that God has with Israel, reminding the people that God is a loving father. Even if she's a harlot, and that's what Israel was, God still loves Israel. A call to repentance and a promise of forgiveness and renewal. We'll deal more with Isaiah later because he's big. He speaks a lot in both areas he speaks. But Micah is a little one. Religious worship needs more than worship. It needs to be action. These are all good warnings for us now. Nahum tells Judah that her political alliance aren't going to save her. Nineveh, the story of Nineveh, had repented and then went bad again. Remember when in Job, no, it wasn't Job, Jonah. Jonah was in the belly of the whale. He was supposed to go to Nineveh. He said, I'm not going to Nineveh. They're all nasty people. Well, he sat in the belly of a whale for a while and then figured he better go because the whale spit him out. These are all stories reminding the people who God is, hoping to get their attention. I love the Jewish people because they tell great stories. And through our history, some of the best comedians have been Jewish, you know, because they know how to weave a story. And that doesn't mean every detail is totally accurate. Like, do you really believe Jonah sat in the belly of a whale? That's just a great way to make a point, you know, telling that story. Anything else you'd like to say? I don't really have a whole lot, because I want you to pay attention to these. I gave you all this information, and then go read what you want to read.
You said at one point that Jesus really didn't bring anything new to the system. What he did was to do what the prophets had
told the people
to do.
Right.
The question, if these people here are outside of the governmental system.
Right.
Where does he get that kind of information? I'm guessing these people don't have a lot of status within the community or...
Yeah, they don't, but somebody was keeping track along the way. The stories got handed down after the fact. You know, they're going to be split as a nation during this time, and then some will go back, you know, and leave being in Babylon and Assyria.
But I'm guessing that most of the education comes out of the temple. And the temple would be teaching what the people in charge wanted to be taught.
Right.
So if Jesus is going to learn these kinds of things, he's going to get education outside of the mainstream.
Absolutely.
So how does that happen?
Well, he must have been a child prodigy because when he was 12 years old, he was in the temple.
I get that. But the point is, he's in the temple.
But after they're taken off into exile, they rethink of who they are and where they've come from. And then after that period, they go back and reorganize as a whole group, not two groups, not Israel and Judah, but one group. And people are writing in the Jewish faith are reflecting on what the heck happened and why. And so a lot of these things, you know, are remembered and are written.
And did Mary have something to do before Jesus was born with the Essenes?
I don't know.
Something about she put a different input into his life than the standard temple stuff. Look into that.
I will look into that. But see, Jesus comes long after they've been in exile, and it's during that exile time that they rethink.
So then during the exile there would be some repudiation of the previous system or leaders that they had, and then we're more looking to the people for input.
Right. That's right. It's all hindsight is always better.
That's exactly what it is.
That's exactly right. And it gets written, a lot of this stuff gets written down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they reorganize as a group of people after they've been in exile. And then they come back and try to resurrect who the heck they are in terms of God's people. And then they get super organized again.
Mess it up again.
And that's when Jesus comes mm-hmm. into the scene.
Yes.
And it becomes a whole religion of rules and regulations again after a couple of hundred years in hindsight, you know. And now a lot of these things were written during exile time from these prophets. And if the prophet was not telling the future as it came true, the prophet didn't make it into the book. But it's Jewish scribes and Jewish that start putting the stories together. And it's during exile that they reflect, and it's during that time they start writing. Even Genesis probably was the last book of the Old Testament to be written.
Really?
Because it's just the Reader's Digest condensation of the whole story.
Which book was the last one?
Genesis.
Oh, really?
Especially Genesis 1 through 11.
Huh.
That's the very last thing. And that really puts it all together. Having learned from, hundreds of years of history of what happened to them, they condense it, that especially Genesis 1 through 11. That's the condensed version of the whole Old Testament. And they learned. They learned from what is sin. It's listening to the tempter. It's not paying attention to the Father. You know, it's interesting when you look at all that. So when Jesus came onto the scene, he was raised a good Jewish boy in the temple. They had reorganized, and we'll get to that, after exile time, we'll get to that.
But he would have heard about Isaiah. He would have.
Oh, absolutely. It's Isaiah that he copies of all. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when they look back over their history, and you too, all of you, when you look back over your history, don't some people really jump out that they made a huge impact on you that you'd never realized what a big impact that was? You know, pay attention to that in your own lives. And that is what happens to them as a nation. And then, you know, of course, the whole world felt so guilty after World War II that we gave them a piece of property that we thought belonged to them originally, the promised land, only to disrupt poor Arab people that had lived there for hundreds of years. And that's been the contention ever since. I mean, I'm not against that we should have given them property, but I'm not so sure we did it the right way for the sake of those Arabs.
You know, we're taught the Bible, the Word of God. When I finally figured out that people wrote the Bible, I said, oh, for goodness sake.
That's the problem.
That is.
People didn't screw anything up.
Well, and when Jesus grew up and he knew Isaiah and he started doing exactly what Isaiah had told the people to do and say, and the whole religion had become black and white, with rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. There's still a sector of Judaism, and we used to go into New York City and see the Hasidim.
There are a bunch of different sectors of
Yes,
Judaism.
There are, mm-hmm. but with their curly Q.
Well, Protestantism too.
Right,
yeah.
You know, that are hanging on to the tradition. And in a sense, you're happy for them because they hang on to the story. As long as they...
It's easy if you do this, you follow.
And they look, you know, they've got the curls. They look like the goats. Even though the sheep and the goats are not the winners. They look like the goats because they've got curly hairs here.
Are those the people that all have measles?
Maybe.
Oh. Yo, yeah.
Maybe.
They have an immune size.
It's possible. But there's so much to learn from this.
Yeah.
You know, don't get hung up on all the details. Just hear the truths that are behind it. And there's so much to learn from this history, you know, and it's, that's why, you know, I've told you many times, write your own family, write your own story.
Mm-hmm.
Write it down, because it'll make you come up with understanding, not judgment, mm-hmm. but understanding of why you are the way you are. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good thing. I can hardly wait. We received an email just before I left from a friend who went to Forest Hills High School today to be with his son, is involved in something. And Dr. Ben Carson, a physician, spoke there today. And his whole story was about how we've treated the Muslims, and that's a disaster for this country if we don't wake up. That Europe is in so much trouble because they rejected Muslims. They've always rejected Muslims. And he's talking about financially how much trouble they are in. I mean, I can hardly wait to go home and read it, but I just glanced over a little bit of it. But this whole sense of closing people out because they're different, or it's the very same God. You know, my friend Parvana, I think I've told you about her. You know, she wanted to know, she was in some, she's Muslim, but she was going to this church. I told you about this. Okay, so Linda gave me a list of possible churches, and she went to the First Presbyterian Church several weeks ago. She's been going every Sunday. She took a picture of it, sent it to me, and said, I love it. I love the people. They love me. And I showed that to Linda, so she's going to write to the pastors of those churches and thank them. They're being the church. And she gets it. She's worshiping the same God. She's also celebrating the Muslim New Year, which took place a couple of weeks ago. I mean, we all do it differently, but it's the same God. And it's okay to do it differently. But we're so afraid. And it's fear. It's all about fear. If somebody's different, and heaven forbid they don't accept Jesus Christ as their Savior, because then they'll end up in hell.
We think it is so great when we accept the Muslims, but the Muslims, many Muslims don't accept Christians.
Some.
We lived in Saudi Arabia for 10 years, and we were not allowed to set foot inside of a mosque.
Yeah.
Some.
Yeah.
But,
they're,
you know.
They're just as dumb as we are.
There is.
I was going to say,
there's
yeah.
that. A whole section about every religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she, you know, when
well,
we sat on it.
Individuals are a different thing,
right.
but the.
Well, when
I
we.
I was taught all Presbyterians were going to hell, no sense even looking at them.
Well, when I first moved here, I swear to God, if I somebody asked me where I went to church, I thought they're going to get down on their hands and knees and
start praying for you.
It's what, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously. They wouldn't have. That was also
no, but
my,
no.
You know,
but I mean, when you grow up around a lot of people that all think exactly alike, mm-hmm. you tend to feel, you know, I see this,
mm-hmm.
that they have the right answers,
mm-hmm.
and then they're never open to other experiences or other awarenesses.
Don't you think we are all like that, though?
Mm-hmm. To a certain extent.
To a certain extent.
If we're not aware of it, especially.
I think we're all tribal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh.
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's exactly.
I'm not as worried about having the right answers as I am about having the right questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought your joke today was just perfect.
Yeah. That was good.
Did you all hear the joke? Do you want to tell it again?
No, go ahead.
You tell it. You tell it. I've talked enough.
All right.
Okay, listen.
Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Trump all get to heaven at the same time.
Oh, gee.
And they get at the gate, and the person at the gate says, "I don't know if we can let you in. You're going to have to talk to God." So God brings them in, sets them down, and he says, "You know, what do you believe?" And Mrs. Clinton, "What do you believe?" She says, "Well, I believe in children. I believe it takes a community, a village to raise the children." And, that's fine. Thank you. "You know, Mr. Obama, what do you believe?" "Well, I believe that everybody has the right to participate in the decision making." "That's fine, Mr. Obama." "And Mr. Trump, what do you believe?" "I believe you're sitting in my seat."
"I believe you're sitting in my seat."
Yeah.
"Trump said to God."
Yeah, that sounds right.
But talk about a life that worships other gods.
This I can't understand, because I've known a lot of sleazeball evangelicals, but how come the evangelicals who are so outwardly moral love Trump?
I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't understand it either.
Well,
I guess it's because then you can do anything you want and God forgives.
Well, God's on your side. I mean, you're saved. You are saved, so what are you worried about?
Yeah.
Here comes somebody. Mm-hmm. Hi. Okay. It's okay. It's fine. You can come in. You can break in anytime. I really don't have, I mean, I could go on and on, but I don't think there's any need at this point. I think
we shouldn't be talking too much.
I think we've covered this part of the story, you know, and next week it'll be I believe it's in Kings and Chronicles, the whole divided kingdom issue, moving along right where we are in history with these prophets. And I don't, you know, you can read it if you want. It's pretty icky. I mean, it just really is.
I thought Judges was icky.
Yeah. Well, it all is.
It all is.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's, I didn't either.
But
I didn't know there were that many prophets.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of remember the big names.
Right. Well, it's
Isaiah, Jeremiah.
Right, right.
Then you show this.
All those prophets. Well, some of them are really little, you know, but they are not in there unless they made it, you know. And
is there like one or two prophets per book?
No.
Which books are
right?
No. Seriously, do they fit in?
Into all the kings. They fit into every, that one thing that I...
Nathan, I got.
Well,
that one.
They all have their own book.
All of these.
Yeah, but the point is, do they also fit into some of the other books in terms of time?
Well, they fit into the history, Kings and Chronicles. Chronicles is just a repeat of the history in Kings.
Okay.
And they all fit into that history.
So is there a pairing kind of thing? Can you juxtapose, you know, books and prophets?
There's no book that
I know there's no book that does that, but can you do it?
Well, you can when you're reading the history.
Whoever cooked up this whole soup called theology.
Right.
I was going to say, I don't know how you get through seminary. There is so much information. How do you take it all in?
I just like to say, hi, God.
It's just if you want the history.
But it's phenomenal.
It is.
I can understand why you really are not a minister until you go through and understand.
And then every seminary is different, aren't they? Yeah. Some of them teach you to think.
Oh.
And some of them teach you what they want you to believe. And there are many that do that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a continual fight over here at Western. Mm-hmm. You know, I had many excellent professors, but I know that there are some that are not, you know, that just want you to.
I think Jesus would think it was terrible.
In most cases.
Yeah,
because the only thing Jesus thinks is important is that we love everybody and do accordingly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I never saw Jesus leave anybody out, did you?
No, never. Mm-hmm. The the best thing about the Bible is it captures the history, mm-hmm. you know, and it's how many thousands of years have people believed in this one God?
Mm-hmm.
Without, and you know, and the ins and outs with that, the experiences with that, the losing the focus, the finding the focus. I mean, just that in itself is enough for me.
Why do we keep losing it?
Well, because we're human.
Yeah.
And we want to be in charge. And we want to be successful. And we want to be bigger and better and more. You know, it's the same story that we are talking about today. So then it's really important to listen for those other voices that show up in our lives. But, you know, it's very hard for some people that have been very successful to even think about the fact that maybe, just maybe, they've made some poor decisions because they keep making more money and they're very successful in the eyes of the world. But being a child of God, being a light in the world, how about that?
Well, what if there's no hell and all these guys will get by with it?
Well, if they're all for, I mean.
Yes, right.
If we're, everybody's loved, we might have that.
But it would be very nice if I can't even worry about that, because I don't even know. You know, I don't even, I'm thinking by the time I go, I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be tired of clearing my throat. I'm going to be tired of going to the physical therapist. Who knows what happens, you know, after that. I can't worry about that, but I am worried about our world for my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Because it is.
But there have been some very, very wealthy people who are donating.
Absolutely.
Whole wealth.
That's right.
To good causes.
Yep.
And there's an organization of those people trying to bring other people in who are very wealthy. So that's a...
Yeah,
I mean that's on the other good side,
and that is true. Not all people that not all people that are super successful are off the track. I think it's harder to be super duper wealthy and be, you know, and not bend it a little bit every once in a while, because after all, then I'll do better.
Easier to believe in God when you're super wealthy. It's hard to believe in God when you're super hungry.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It is. No. Yeah. This is world history that's happening in 2019. My biggest question is, who the heck are the prophets? Mm-hmm. Where are they?
Well, people 200 years from now would be able to tell us, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't there a period of time not very long ago when many of the evangelical ministers thought that they were the prophets?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
The prophets are silent and quiet.
Mm. We need them to speak up. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next election, and then what happens in this country after that.
Pretty scary, isn't it?
I know it is.
It is really
scary. But see, if you love history, and if you pay attention to history, there's a chance you can learn from history. That's why, I mean, the least you can do is get your history down for your own family, for your own children, grandchildren. I mean, share that.
If you're right that 200 years from now or 100 years from now we could look back, people will look back and say, who are they now? Can we look back 100 or 200 years and say, who have the prophets been for the last century or two? And if that's the case, who would you identify?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've recently read this John Meacham book of Thomas Jefferson's life. And from the beginning of this country, there have been these two pullings,
polarizing,
one hand trying to pull the country down and the other hand trying to build it. It just seems to be built into human nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it is.
So But we think of founding fathers as all being so righteous, goodness sake, they were.
Oh, they were.
Oh, they were.
They were a bunch of scumbags like everybody else.
Right, right.
But who would be the prophets for the last 100 years, 200 years?
Boy, I don't know.
Martin Luther King.
Who would have been the prophets?
Yeah, I would choose Martin Luther King, too.
The cartoon writer.
I mean, he dared.
And there probably was some minor ones, too, that is not real well known.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of spiritual awakening in the beginning of our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is, though, like, even in Congress, I get so disappointed because as a kid, I remember great congressmen, you know, that were, buildings were named after them.
Right.
And then today, you know, you don't have hardly anybody.
Nobody
wants to be in politics.
Nobody, nobody wants to trip up the power.
They go with
right,
the
yeah,
they
exactly.
want to be on the right side of the power. Yeah.
Yeah.
I should think about that. Maybe that's my next career. But anyway, I really don't have anything else unless you want to keep talking.
You know, you could be the 21st candidate out there, run for president.
Yeah, right. you know who's running? Marianne Williamson. Did you ever read any of her books? Marianne Williamson. I mean, she's a Christian with all the answers.
Oh, dear.
Well,
yeah.
You know what I learned from history, though, that one man cannot destroy our government, so I'm just waiting for the next one, because I thought it was terrible when Clinton was in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had some Republicans in, and now we're